Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. I am Mike Hevekin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority, the other members of the court will introduce themselves, including we've got District Court Judge sitting with us this morning because Justice Frydenberg is recused. I'll let her introduce herself. And with that.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
Kimberly Pinkerton. Good morning.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case of the day, then, is State v. Bailey. Mr. Brewster, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. How are we doing?
Pretty good.
Good. May approach.
May approach. And Mr. Liss, good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
I don't.
With that, Mr. Brewster, you may proceed.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, my name is Charles Brewster. I'm from Kearney with Anderson, Klein, Brewster, and Brandt. With me today is my co-counsel, Carson Messersmith. He helped me try this case and draft the brief, so I'm pleased that he's here. Your Honor, this is a criminal case where the issue is statutory interpretation and definition. The facts, I believe, are pretty clear and mostly undisputed. If you read through the briefs, I don't think there's much of a contention about that. Our position is that the state, the plaintiff, failed to prove all of the elements of the crime charged, totally failed to prove one element, and that was the individual named Jesse Sierra was a lawfully committed offender at the time that Sheriff Bailey, our client, refused to house him in his jail. Now,
so your client did refuse to house him, is that correct?
Well, here I say the facts are pretty clear, and then, you know, we get to that point. The way the facts worked is Jesse Sierra was in the custody of Officer Considine with the Chatham Police Department. And at that point, Sheriff Daly had a conversation with him and said, we're not going to take him. And I believe at that point he indicated because of his injuries. So there
have been other conversations before that.
Well, the other, yes, there was another
reasons given for not receiving him into the jail.
I'm sorry, Judge.
Were there other reasons for not receiving him into the jail?
None that he stated.
None that he stated to who?
The law enforcement officers that testified at the trial. Now, there are other reasons that, you know, he shouldn't have been in that jail. One of those reasons was clearly that this guy, the Sierra character, was a real dangerous fella.
So what's the reason he was not received into the jail by your client's determination?
Okay. Sheriff Daly had been informed that Jesse Sierra had been assaulted apparently was informed that, you know, he did have a head injury and an injury to his leg. There's no medical facilities or ability to treat somebody that's injured. And Sheriff Daly said, we're not taking him.
At all or until he's medically cleared? Or
at that point, at all.
Okay. Was he taken to a medical facility?
He was.
Was he medically cleared?
Well, that's a good question. There was testimony that he was. There was no documentation of that. Even if he had been medically cleared, I believe the sheriff still has the ability and the discretion to say, you know what, we're not taking
him. What is your authority for your statement on discretion?
Well, a sheriff is a ministerial officer, but he's also, I think, described as a, believe it or not, quasi-judicial officer. There's a case in State versus Butner, B-U-T-T-N-E-R, at 180 Nebraska 529 from 1966, discussing ministerial officers, and it specifically sets out in that case that a sheriff has the discretion to make decisions, and I think that's the way it should be for somebody in that position.
So you think the authority is case law?
Well, there's that case law.
Is there a statute, for example, that says sheriff has to take at county jail anyone who's been arrested in a specific county?
No, there is not. There is a statute that says a sheriff must receive somebody in the jail if he has been, he or she, lawfully committed. And that's the big...
Are there any limitations on which county? In this case, factually, this individual seemed to have been chopped around to various counties, and there were comments either from your client or others of, well, take him to Scott's Bluff. What duty, for example, did Scott's Bluff have to take this?
I'm not sure that any sheriff has a duty to house a prisoner who's just been arrested. Now, if arrested on a warrant, yes. If committed at a sentencing hearing or a bond hearing or something like that, then yes, and that's the local sheriff.
What do you think that police officers should do with individuals who are arrested but without a warrant? They should just drive them around until they get a warrant? What would you have them do?
Well, okay, it's a two-sided way of looking at this. You know, one, and this is a great case for this example, you've got a police officer arrested this character, very dangerous person, injured, and
For a felony.
Felony, that's right.
So, lawful arrest without a warrant.
Right, for a felony.
No question about that?
No question.
Okay, so he's lawfully arrested. The officer was an individual had statutory authority to conduct the arrest.
Yes.
Any question about that?
No, sir.
Okay. So far we have a lawfully arrested individual by an officer who had authority to do so. Take them into custody. Back to Judge Stacy's question, what should the officer do at that point?
Well, at that point, if that person, if he wants to take him to a jail, like the jail in Dawes County, which is, almost 100 years old, and that night staffed, inadequately staffed, according to jail standards, they shouldn't have taken this guy.
Can you tie this suggestion to 23-1703, I think you said at the beginning of your argument, there's some statutory interpretation
right.
Arguably presented, I presume, required to receive those lawfully committed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is that duty?
Well, okay, and all good questions. I still haven't answered your question.
I'm patiently waiting. I'm sure you're going to get to it.
I'm going to get to you.
Okay.
If I don't run out of time here, I'm talking too much. The issue is lawfully committed.
I beg your pardon. Required to receive those lawfully committed.
Yes. And in this case, had he been, lawfully arrested for a felony? Absolutely. But that's not lawfully committed. Judges commit people to incarceration, not cops.
What authority do you have for that?
One, there's no statutory authority that says a law enforcement officer has the ability to commit somebody to a jail.
Well, now maybe you've answered Justice Stacy's question. You believe committed a mere arrest for a felony doesn't equal to committed.
Right.
Yes.
So
the heart of your argument is that there's a statutory gap, isn't it?
Yes.
The phrase lawfully committed has been in Section 23-1703 since 1879, right?
Mr. Messersmith pointed that out to me this morning.
What did that mean in 1879?
Well, I think that, back then when law enforcement was not as sophisticated as it is now, that meant that a judge has got to commit somebody, not a sheriff or a constable.
Weren't felony arrests without warrants permitted even then?
Your Honor, I don't know. I suspect that they were.
And weren't those folks placed somewhere? I mean, there weren't Ramada Inns to rent a room back in those days. So they surely were housed.
They were, and probably often illegally. But that was back in those days, and luckily we have better due process now.
So is part of what you're arguing from a statutory interpretation basis that the sheriff has some duty to judge the legality of a warrantless arrest?
No. The judge has a duty to judge whether or not he should receive somebody into his jail. The sheriff does. Yeah, he's got to do that. And here's why. The minute that a sheriff takes somebody into his jail, he's responsible for him. 100%. And
what if a judge commits someone to the jail and the sheriff has the same concerns about this is a dangerous person or there's medical concerns? I mean, that would apply just as much to a judge committing the person, would it not?
It would. And at that point, sheriffs have the authority to contact other facilities and say, hey, look, I've got a guy here that... it has some real medical issues. We can't handle this. Can you please take them? I think out in the panhandle, these smaller jails ship people to Scottsbluff all the time.
But who ships them?
Well, very good point, Your Honor.
That's who's responsible for the transportation of them?
Yep. The sheriff that has them in his or her custody is responsible for that transport.
29410 sets forth that any person lawfully having someone in custody may place that individual in a county jail of the state for one night or longer, as the occasion may require. Does that fill in any statutory gap?
No, and the reason it's the word may. Doesn't say shall.
So this is an officer as I'm in custody. That would be the arresting officer. That wouldn't be the sheriff.
Well, it says he may put him into a jail.
And they tried to, and your client refused.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's the bottom line, Your Honor. We can't have law enforcement officers directing what sheriffs do with their jails.
Can we have them driving around with arrested people and no place to take them? Should we be beefing up the back seats of the patrol cars?
Happens all the time.
Until when?
Well,
until a court order? You've run out of time, but before you sit down, if you can, I'd like to know what the officer is supposed to do with a lawfully arrested person.
Take him to a jail that will accept him or her.
And if that doesn't exist?
take them to the jail where the sheriff says yes. Just drive around until the sheriff says yes.
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I'm out of time. I would love to continue this discussion. This has been, frankly, a somewhat fascinating case. I'm sure Mr. List is going to have some things to contradict to what I have to say. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. List. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Nathan List, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. Daley claims that the evidence was insufficient to find him guilty of official misconduct for two primary reasons. Number one, because he was not required to accept custody of Jesse Sierra under 23-1703. And number two, because he had authority to refuse to accept custody of Sierra under Nebraska jail standards. We disagree on both points. As far as the first question, which is appears to be the primary question here, whether Daley was required to accept custody of Sierra under 23-1703, the dispute here, of course, is whether Sierra was lawfully committed for purposes of 23-1703, which provides a sheriff of each county.
Isn't the real problem here prosecutorial overreach? Aren't you trying to solve, wasn't someone trying to solve a problem with a criminal statute that should have been solved in some other manner?
I'm not sure what you're referring to in terms of what was trying to be solved here. I mean, the arresting agency was
somebody didn't like what the sheriff did here, so they found a statute to prosecute the sheriff when they could have mediated or sat down and talked with the sheriff about what ought to happen in the future.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have no role in that investigation or whether that decision was going to be made to prosecute
that
the offense.
That is true, but doesn't it affect a kind of vagueness argument in this particular case?
I'm not sure if it...
Nobody knows what the real duties of the sheriff are. Don't you have to have some specificity in order to prosecute this?
Well, it's our position that we have enough specificity here because it's a matter of statutory interpretation, and when we interpret the statute according to standard principles of statutory construction, the duty did apply here. And he violated
that
duty
maybe,
by not.
I think we might be making a mistake of merging the facts with our statutory interpretation. I mean, the color here seems to be the sheriff doesn't like his somebody stepping on his toes in his territory, and if you deliver this person, I'm not taking him. Medically compromised or anyway. That seems to be the story. Am I getting that from the evidence? Somewhat correctly?
Yes, I mean...
Okay, so what is the legal significance of that?
Of the sheriff refusing to accept the arrestee?
Yeah, rather than ignoring the fact he may have been sore, what's the legal significance of his acts?
Well, the legal significance, if it does in fact amount to him refusing to accept the arrest when he was required to, amounts to official misconduct, which is what he was prosecuted for.
I mean, is his motivation even relevant to the discussion? I mean, there's some discussion of, you know, that his reason for not accepting the prisoner was he was mad he wasn't included on this investigation. And Mr. Brewster seems to want to argue, well, no, it was a medical concern. But does it even matter under the state's position his reasons for not accepting Mr. Sierra as the prisoner?
Well, I guess in my view it does, or at least to some extent it does, because there was at least some concern here factually that Mr. Sierra had sustained some injuries, and under the jail standards there could be a legitimate basis to refuse someone, at least for the time being, to your jail because of medical concerns, at least until you've got a fitness for confinement. You know, documentation to that effect. So
from the state's perspective, what is the short list of permissible reasons that a sheriff can refuse a lawfully arrested?
Well, when I look at the jail standards, I think if it were a capacity issue, you'd be able to decline somebody. And beyond that, we have two sections here in the jail standards that talk about if someone's First provision is talking about someone's unconscious, seriously injured, to the extent that they present a substantial risk to themselves
or another. So let me to interrupt. Do the jail standards factor into our understanding of lawfully committed? In other words, you can't be lawfully committed if you're in a medically compromised box. Is that where this is going? Is that aiding our interpretation?
Well, I think there's potential interplay there. It's our position that the jail standards don't apply here, partially because the defendant's reasoning wasn't any of these reasons, and partially because they don't apply here. But, I mean, to the extent that we're looking at whether or not these could come into play and affect whether or not somebody should be admitted, they could.
Or are they lawfully committed?
Who can lawfully commit?
Well, the state's position is that it could be done either through law enforcement who has arrested somebody without a warrant and then initiates the process of booking them into jail, that they can commit them that way, or alternatively, that it could be done through a court order. I mean, if somebody sentences somebody and instructs them to be, serve a sentence of incarceration, they've obviously been committed in that regard as well. So I think it could occur either way.
You're familiar with our recent statutory interpretation jurisprudence that in looking to the words of the statute looks to the common understanding of those words at the time the statute was enacted. And your opponent seems to agree that lawfully committed was a phrase that was in the statute in 1879, when at least it appears it was first enacted. Do you agree that far?
I believe so. I didn't trace the actual original statute back, but I know from the case law dating back to the 1800s, it did contain that language, so I assume that's correct.
So what did lawfully committed mean in 1879?
Well, I obviously was not alive at those at the time, so I'm going off what I assume.
Any of us on this
but I think a part
despite
of what the appellant's argument is getting at is that I think that, when we look at sentencing orders and commitments, is sort of a term of art in what we think of now, and that's the implication that they're trying to make, that it should require a court order. But
so
I would say that back then,
there were warrantless arrests on felonies in 1879, weren't there?
I assume so.
I mean, wasn't that true under the common law, that an officer could arrest for felony without a warrant?
I believe so.
So they surely were housed somewhere back then.
Right.
Was that the sheriff?
Well, I don't know if it was the sheriff then, but they would have been housed somewhere. And it probably would have been the sheriff. Or, I mean, somebody would have been, maintaining the jail, and that's where they would have went. Not sure who would have been in charge of it at the time, but in terms of what lawfully committed would have meant when it was drafted, I think it would have meant then what it means now, or at least one of the possible interpretations now, which is that law enforcement, after making a lawful arrest, would be entitled to lawfully commit them to the jail.
Now, there are some offenses that more recent statutes have permitted officers to arrest without a warrant, for example, in the protection order statutes. That may not apply to those. I'm not sure. I'm just saying, don't we have to look at this language in 1879? What did it mean? Hasn't changed. What was permitted then, and doesn't that control the statutory interpretation argument? And if you agree with that, help us out as best you can with what it means.
Well, I think that, generally speaking, a matter of statutory interpretation, you are going to be looking at the term, what it meant at the time, because that's when they used it. But at the same time, we look at statutes in pari materia along with other statutes, and that's part of why, in my brief, I pointed out that we have several other statutes here now where the legislature has not only expressly authorized warrantless arrest, but they have expressly authorized officers who have somebody lawfully in custody to take them and confine them in any jail in any county in the state.
Which is 29410.
And 29-1001.
Which was codified in 1873.
So, beforehand. And then 29-1001. And so, when I read these statutes in conjunction, that would indicate that law enforcement has the ability to confine
I'm getting
somebody.
A little worried that we're asking, the court is being asked to perform the functions of professional historians.
Well,
You may be aware of cases now where some trial courts are actually hiring or appointing historians to get to original meaning rather than the law clerks and the judge.
I have not heard of that, but be it as it may, I guess I'm just applying the principles of statutory construction as I'm used to them, and I understand your question. But even looking back, taking that statute in conjunction with the others, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't lend credence to the notion that the only way one could be lawfully committed would be through a court order. It's our position that as a matter of statutory construction and as a matter of policy interpretation here, that it could be done by law enforcement. And
are the jail standards board provisions an exception to 29410 and 23-1703? I mean, if we agree with you that those statutes require the sheriff to house the prisoner committed by the law enforcement officer, how do they also have authority under the jail standards board provisions to refuse them for various reasons? How do those interact?
Well, the jail standards as an administrative code can't trump the statute.
Right.
I mean, they have effect of statutory law as long as they are consistent with statute. They obviously can't conflict with it or enlarge it. And so I guess the way I view this is that the statutory duty is the primary duty. You shall receive somebody who is lawfully committed, and then you look to the jail standards. If there are particular circumstances where perhaps somebody should not be admitted, or at least temporarily not admitted, and then you look at the circumstances in which somebody might legitimately refuse to admit someone, whether it's a medical problem or a jail capacity problem, or if somebody's intoxicated, the jail standards say you could temporarily not accept them, or you could suspend their admission, but that they should be admitted afterward.
You wouldn't be prosecuted for it.
If there were a legitimate basis for not admitting them at that time, correct, you would be justified.
So it is, and you are suggesting that the jail standards function as an exception to the statutory language. That's what I hear you saying. Maybe I'm not hearing you correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think that is what I'm saying.
How can that happen? How can regulations create exceptions to statutes? How can that be reconciled with anything in the statute?
Well, as long as they aren't conflicting with it, I don't know that creating an exception is necessarily a conflict. I mean, if the jail standards just said, for instance, that the sheriff has absolute discretion to just decide, then I think that would be a conflict, because the statute says you shall receive them if they're lawfully committed. But I think looking at it, the jail standards go hand in hand with the statute. And although they are an exception, it's not necessarily a conflict. It's just qualifying circumstances.
Are they of equal strength?
Admission might not be feasible.
I think, are they of equal strength, the standards compared to the statute?
They are, as long as the administrative code doesn't conflict with the statute.
And you're basing that upon the statutory authorization for the jail standards promulgation?
Well, I'm basing that just on the on our case law, which establishes that administrative code has the same effect as statutory law, as long as it doesn't conflict with or invalidly enlarge or expand the statute.
Is it possible that the finder of fact could have determined on the record that Mr. Sierra wasn't so injured so as to preclude being jailed?
Well, the finder of fact in this case, being the county court, found that to the extent it was being argued that Mr. Daly's reason or one of his potential reasons for not accepting Sierra was the medical injuries, the county court refused that or rejected that argument and pointed out that, well, you'd already made the statement that you weren't going to accept.
So as the record comes to us, is that a finding of fact by a trial court that saw the witnesses and so forth?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a credibility finding to the extent that the defendant is asserting that.
With respect to our review, thank you.
Yeah.
So if a prisoner, someone's arrested and they have serious injury and they cannot be taken to a jail, and they're taken to a hospital, unless the arresting officer releases them, they're still in custody. Is that correct?
Correct.
So somebody's going to have to guard them. Do we know who that would be? Would it be the agency that arrested them? Would it be the sheriff? Do we know who would have that responsibility?
Well, in that context, I think it would have to be the arresting agency because they assumed custody of that individual and they have never relinquished custody or turned over custody to some other agency. I mean, that would occur if and when you confine them in a jail, assuming it's with a different agency.
So the arresting officer releases custody when he delivers, he or she delivers the inmate to the jail, or the jail accepts, or when does that happen? When does that crossover happen?
It's my understanding, just generally and from the record, that would happen once, assuming the jail is a different agency, that would happen once they're booked in and they have accepted custody of them there. That then custody shifts from the arresting agency to the agency that's running the jail facility.
Thank you.
I am well out of time. If there are no further questions, we would ask you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I assume we have no time for rebuttal. Is that correct?
No, sir.
We have no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you very much. That concludes arguments in State versus Daily. And you are excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Pankin is going to take leave from the court. She'll be back on the last case of the day, and the court will be rejoined by Justice Frydenberg, who will be with us in a minute.